Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Listening to The Beauty of Our Weapons by M. Darusha Wayne. For more information, go to darusha.ca/weapons. Episode 5, Chapter 9. Dext was still thinking about the worry in Annabelle's voice as he linked into the ruins of the light of the Simulacrum Temple. She wasn't a particularly nervous person. Indeed, she usually talked Dex out of the little panics he often got himself into. So, if she was worried, then he was worried. Very worried. Dex found himself materializing in a large room that reminded him of some of the more progressive art galleries he'd visited in M-City. Annabelle had dragged him to a couple of art shows the previous year, and he surprised himself by finding contemporary virtual art quite compelling. The wreckage of the temple had such a familiar feel to it that Dex scanned his memory for the most recent shows he'd gone to see. He set a system to scan the images of the temple that Reverend Alfred had supplied and look for any similarities among the work of the artists Dex had recently seen. It was a long shot, but Dex knew that it was often the strangest hunch that paid off in the end. He was walking up to the steaming hot tub, which was taking up most of the chancel, and looked around the walls. High up near the vaulted ceiling were a series of ultra-realistic images of animal slaughter. It was disturbing, even to Dex, and he wondered if there was some message in the choice of imagery. Walking through the space had given him the strong impression that this was the calculated work of a person or group, rather than the random mutations of a program gone wrong. He wasn't sure if that made him feel better or worse. He was studying the images when he felt Annabelle link into the room. "Ugh," she said, following Dex's gaze to the images on the walls. "Can you believe that people used to eat that?" She pointed at one of the pictures. "It's enough to make you want to shuffle off the mortal coil entirely." "Huh?" Dex grunted. "What are you talking about?" "Oh, sorry," Annabelle said. "I wanted a stretch before I came over, so I went home first. On the way, I was reading this paper about the possibility of installing human consciousness to the gnat. It's still a ways off, and with the stuff we're seeing right now, I sure wouldn't want to be an early adopter, but it was on my mind." "Jesus," Dex said, and Annabelle shushed him. "We're in a church," she chided. "It's not a Jesus church," Dex said, "and don't change the subject. Human consciousness online? You mean moving lock, stock, and barrel to M-City?" "It wouldn't have to be M-City, necessarily," Annabelle said. "Actually, there would probably have to be a whole new construct built for us to live in. Much more robust, I'd think." "But you do mean dumping the physical body, right?" Dex asked. "Yeah," Annabelle said. "No more dying, or at least not permanently." "That's insane," Dex exclaimed. "Why?" Annabelle asked. "If we have the ability to live online, which in many ways we're doing just fine at the moment," she took Dex's hand, squeezed, and spun him around, "why should we be held hostage by inferior hardware? The body dies. There's no way around that, as far as I know. But software can live a hell of a lot longer, and that's really all our minds are." "That's pretty heavy," Dex said, pulling his hand out of Annabelle's grip. "Too much for me right now." He took a step away from her and said, "Let's just see what we can figure out here, okay?" "Sure," Annabelle said after a moment's pause. "Whatever you want." They walked through the interior of the building, noting the areas where changes had been made. Annabelle paid particular attention to the spots between where there was new imagery and where the original building was still in evidence, taking samples of the actual code which rendered the images. "I'm hoping I'll be able to tell if this was done by a person or a program," she said, "once I get a good analysis of the code." "You can tell that kind of thing?" Dex asked. Sure, Annabelle said. People are logical in one way, machines are logical in another, and random bugs aren't logical at all. I hope there's enough here for me to get a handle on how this particular set of image distortions were made. Dex left it to her and walked through the front door to look at the exterior. From the stock files of the original building that Reverend Alfred had given him, Dex knew that the door was supposed to look like a hazy portal. It was round, with a blue, starry field in it. Walking through it mimicked a sensation of shooting through space in an extremely high velocity. Now, it appeared as nothing more than a hole in the wall, as ordinary as the door to Dex's own office. The external face of the building had been completely redone, making it seem smaller and more boxy than the original design. Dex knew enough to know that each structure in M-City could have any shape, and the internal dimensions need not correlate to the outside shape. Separate fees were paid for the external space, including easements, which contained no resolution, the interior space for imagery, and the interior capacity for individual accounts to view and interact with the space. Resolution spaces, those parts which looked like a physical structure, were most expensive, the outside coordinates more so than interior space. The temple still owned the space the building occupied inside and out. The problem was rebuilding the structure itself. It would probably have to be done again, and while they surely had access to the original plans, the code would have to be rewritten and, more expensively, re-rezzed into M-City. The main reason that only a handful of people owned virtual property of their own was the cost to instantiate the imagery. Dex wondered if the church would be able to afford the repairs. He had to admit that the building looked pretty terrible from the outside. Even if it were just a shop, he could imagine its owners being distraught over the changes. Considering that it was a weird sect that seemed to worship virtuality, he felt pretty bad for them. Annabelle came out of the interior and looked over the facade. "This is pretty awful," she said. "Agreed," Dex said, then paused a moment. "I don't want to influence your analysis of the code," he began, "but does this remind you of anything?" "Like what?" Annabelle asked, taking a step back and cocking her head. "Never mind," Dex said. "It's a cockamamie theory, and I don't want to give you any ideas. If anything comes of it, I'll let you know." "Hmm," Annabelle grunted. "Now I'm really intrigued. But I can be patient." She took one last look at the building and then turned to Dex. "I want to get a head start on looking at this code," she said, "and I have a feeling that Zizou is going to have me pretty busy on those anomalies soon." "I don't doubt it," Dex said and moved a step closer. "Hopefully we can find an hour or two to get away from it all again soon." He grinned at her and felt her come into his arms. "That would be nice," she said as she snuggled into his chest. She looked up at him and they kissed, long and slowly. "I better go," she whispered. "Yep, you'd better," Dex growled. "I love you, kiddo." "You too," she answered, and disappeared. Dex slinked out of M-City and saw the beginnings of a sunrise peeking through his window. He stretched and decided that a walk would do him good. He left his apartment and passed the morning Uprajnyeyi practitioners twisting themselves into pretzels. He looked uncomfortable, but they all seemed to be enjoying themselves. "Takes all kinds," thought Dex. He walked down to the waterfront and looked out at the sea. He'd lived on the coast before, but he didn't think he'd ever been to the seashore until he came to Nice. He squinted against the rising sun, which glinted off the blue ocean. It reminded him of the shared dream he had with Annabelle the other night. He wondered why they felt they had to purchase a virtual package to experience the ocean when it was right here all along. It made him think about what Annabelle was talking about while they were at the temple. Even if she couldn't admit it yet, Dex knew that if there was a safe way to move her entire life to the physical world, Annabelle would take that option. She tolerated the physical world better now than she had ever before, but it was still a challenge for her to interact with people. She was strong and confident, completely in her element in M-City, but it was a different story in the physical world. Dex was grateful for the few moments of her time he got with her outside the virtual world. He wondered if he would be willing to give it all up, the physicality he still believed was the only real reality, in order to be with her. He watched a tour boat bob in the distance, and hoped that it would be a long time before he had to make that decision. He stared off into the endless blue for a few more moments, then turned to head back toward downtown. He stopped in at Le Retro, ordering a small hot cocoa with a shot of liqueur. He was sipping the frothy drink when he felt a hand on his shoulder. He looked up and back into the round face of René Biagini. "What are you doing out at this ungodly time of day?" the short man asked, his glossy mustache curled up from his grin. "Just having a little nightcap," Dex said, "spending my client's exorbitant fees. Biagini laughed aloud. "Business is good, then?" he asked, slipping into the seat opposite Dex. "I've picked up another case since last we spoke," Dex said. "More weird things happening in M-City. Maybe it's sabotage, maybe it's vandalism, maybe something else. It's hard to tell at this stage." "Vandalism, you say?" Biagini said, frowning. "Is this turning into a real issue?" "Maybe," Dex said. "Maybe not. You got a request from Zizou to keep an eye out?" "If I remember rightly, it was a joint request from Larson on the M-City squad and your Captain Zhang," Biagini said, arching an eyebrow. "Details," Dex said. "Are your people seeing anything interesting here?" "Now that we're looking for it," Biagini said, "our contacts in M-City are seeing things all over the place. It's not just us noticing, either."
"Oh?" Dex queried.
"I spent a little time trolling over some popular boards," Biagini said. "The things we do in a day's work, eh, my friend?" A server appeared with a steaming coffee, which was placed before Biagini. He took a sip and literally smacked his lips. Before he met Rene Biagini, Dex had always assumed that it was just a phrase. Now he saw it enacted in reality most weeks.
"And," Dex prompted, "what are the masses talking about?"
"Mostly," Biagini said. "You don't want to know. But they are also talking about things being wrecked online. Mostly it's small stuff, but a handful of online retailers have had their storefronts busted, just like that friend of mine I was telling you about. Seems like he got off pretty easy."
"How so?"
"A couple of the worst cases forced the shopkeepers to close down for a while to get things back on track," Biagini said. "Some folks were offline for days getting their places fixed." He took another sip of coffee. "There are accusations being thrown around already."
"A protection racket?"
Biagini shook his head. "No one knows anyone who's actually been hit up for cash. It doesn't mean it's not happening, but the talk on the boards is heading in a different direction."
"Anything look interesting?"
Biagini looked at Dex and nodded slowly. "There's some strong feelings about some of those groups. You know the ones. They like to go offline for a few days a month, or they don't ever socialize in M-City. There are a few outspoken nuts who claim that the virtual world is ruining society. The consensus, inasmuch as there is ever a consensus on these boards, is that it's probably someone like that."
Dex thought for a moment.
"It must be someone with pretty good skills," he said. "A programmer who's anti-technology? That's a bit odd."
"True," Biagini said, "but it takes all kinds."
"Indeed," Dex said, remembering the ideas shared by some of the people he'd met when he'd first encountered Stella Bish. "Maybe it's not as far-fetched as it sounds."
"Very little is, my friend," Biagini said. "Truth is stranger, after all."
"Stranger than what?" Dex asked.
"Everything else," Biagini said, laughing.
Chapter 10 It was morning in Guadalajara when Dex sent the message to Stella Bish. He didn't expect to hear from her immediately, and he got what he expected. He'd mentioned in his message that he'd be available in his office all day, so he settled in to review the notes he'd made and to think. There was nothing new from Annabelle in any of the case files, so Dex knew that she hadn't finished her analysis. She was as fastidious as he was about updating files, but she preferred to leave her hunches out of the official record. Dex was actually a little surprised that she'd spoken up at the squad meeting, though that was probably his fault for bringing it up. Regardless, his system would ping him when she updated the files, and he wouldn't have anything from her before that. He opened up the search results from the scan his system had done on similarities between the scene at the Light of the Simulacrum Temple and the contemporary art installations he and Annabelle had attended. Machines were not terribly great at comparing images, so there were several matches that Dex discarded immediately. He could see how the scan picked them, a similarity in color schemes perhaps, or the objects making similar shapes on a large scale. But the human eye immediately could tell that there was no true relationship between many of the examples the system scan had found and the LOS site. However, there was one installation which caught his eye. It was set in a private library, and the artist had retextured all the books as body parts. From a distance, it looked almost normal, but up close you could see the arms, legs, and navels instead of texts. What really made Dex look closely was that the place that should have held the administration counter had been replaced by a giant recliner couch. It was the kind of thing that certain nightclubs might place in dark corners for groups of people to lie about and frolic upon. Dex wasn't sure exactly what it was that reminded him of the LOS temple, but he looked up the artist. Frederick Ahmad was well known in the contemporary virtual art scene, having been commissioned for a number of large-scale installations by some of the best-known galleries. His bio was the usual purple prose, gushing about his unique creative vision, but in between the public relations hyperbole, Dex learned a few things. Ahmad was a follower of the mysteriously named Open Gateway School, which focused on public virtual spaces as their canvases. Many of the early OG artists practiced their craft on spaces that they neither owned nor had permission to use. Ahmad didn't seem to have ever gone that route, but Dex wondered if perhaps the man wasn't expanding his own creative vision back to the roots of the artistic movement which nurtured his style. He also wondered if he wasn't grasping at straws. Artists tend to sign their work, especially celebrity artists like Ahmad. What's the point of creating something if no one knows it's you who did it? Dex shook his head. That was the key to the whole LOS problem. If it was a personal attack on the congregation, shouldn't there be some clear statement? Some obvious graffiti decrying their beliefs as heretical or the group itself as a cult? If it were meant to send a message, where was the message? Which brought Dex back to Annabelle's random bug theory. Dex was disinclined to ascribe to randomness what could more easily be pinned on one or two antisocial humans, but in the absence of any reason for the attacks, he had little to go on. He stood and stared out his false window, watching people walking on the sidewalk below. A young man wearing a tight, sparkly t-shirt and walking a small gold-and-blue dog caught his eye and winked at him. Dex almost returned the gesture, then remembered that everything he was watching was a simulation. He turned his back on the interactive show, just in time to see a shadow stop on the other side of his door. Dex saw a hand come up and lightly rap on the glass of his window. His system informed him that it was Stella Bish, and he said, "Come in." She opened the door, and Dex could see that she was unimpressed with something. From the way she glared at him, he guessed that whatever it was that left a bad taste in her mouth originated with him. "What do you want?" she demanded, having refused his offer of the hard chair. "Excuse me?" Dex asked, settling himself into the plush office chair on his side of the desk. "Your message," she barked. "I hired you to find out what is causing these inconvenient episodes," she said. "Not to have you inconvenience me more." Dex raised an eyebrow and Bish deflated slightly. She sat in the chair and put her small handbag in her lap. "First, have you had any more of those inconvenient episodes?" he asked, excepting, of course, any that I have caused. She smiled slightly, but otherwise ignored Dex's sarcasm. "Everything has been normal in the last few days," she said. "I will inform you immediately if anything does occur." She lowered her eyelids and her voice. "I promise." "Good," Dex said. "Now, the main reason I called is a bit more, shall we say, delicate?" "Oh," Bish said, warming slightly. "That sounds interesting." "I doubt you'll think so in a few minutes," Dex said, then hurriedly carried on. "I have to ask you about the little group you organized. The offline cleanse, I think you called it." Bish frowned. "What about it?" she asked. "If you're looking for a local chapter meeting, we have a public board." "I'm afraid that's not it," Dex said. "Our preliminary investigation is leading us to believe that your strange experiences online aren't unique. In fact, incidences of vandalism and other problems with the system are up several percent across the net. We are following several different lines of inquiry, but one that has already come up in the popular media is that it's a member of some group who's critical of virtual living." Dex waited for the penny to drop, and didn't have to wait long before Bish shot out of her seat and planted both hands on his desk. Her face a scant few centimeters from his, she said in a quiet rage, "You can't be saying what I think you're saying. That someone who's involved in my program is responsible for what is happening to me? That's ridiculous." "Perhaps," Dex said calmly, "but perhaps not. I thought you should be aware of what people are saying, and also to keep it in the back of your mind. As the creator of the offline cleanse, people might be more inclined to speak to you about their more outlandish ideas. At your monthly meetings, perhaps, when you've all logged off for your time away from the nets, maybe someone mentions something they've heard about, or maybe there's a rumor of some programmer with a way to show the rest of us the light. It's not unheard of, and I know that your group has more than its fair share of people who have the skills to pull this sort of thing off." Bish sat back and thought. Dex knew that, emotional as she could appear, Bish was smart enough to recognize what he was saying could be the case. Finally, she nodded once. "It's not impossible," she admitted, "though it seems unlikely that someone who follows my ideas would target me." "Maybe," Dex said, Or maybe they feel like your successful online business is a bit hypocritical for someone who espouses living more in the physical world. He anticipated another outburst, but instead Bish merely smiled again. Touché, Mr. Dexter, she said. I don't want to believe that, of course, but it has a certain logic. She stood and took her purse off the edge of Dex's desk. I don't think anything will come of it, but I'll keep my ears open. She turned and walked to the door. And I will be certain to let you know if I hear anything. So, unless you have something definite to tell me, perhaps be patient enough to let me call you this time, Mr. Dexter? She didn't wait for a response before winking out of Dex's office like a light going out. Dex was walking through the Pieton, twilight turning the windows of the bars, cafes, and restaurants a particular gold color he found strangely soothing. He'd spent the afternoon paging through a few of the local boards, looking for possible hangouts for people who are disenchanted with online living. He didn't expect to stumble across the Vandals. Real life was never that easy. He just wanted to get a feel for whether or not there was enough animosity or energy to support someone spending the time and effort to put forward a campaign like he was seeing. He also just wanted to get out of the apartment for a while. Annabelle would still be at work for another few hours, and he'd just seen Renee the previous day. So he walked through the commercial district, trying to find a coffee house called Antoine's. The place wasn't very big, and there weren't too many patrons, even though it was one of the busiest times in this neighborhood. Dex was reminded a bit of the bar he'd visited in Guadalajara, Robustezas Libres. He wondered if these people were followers of Stella Bish's offline cleanse program as well. Dex had rather a lot of sympathy with the idea that people take a specific amount of time to get away from the virtual world and actually do things with other people here in the physical world. He was neither a joiner nor a follower, though, and he would rather spend his offline time playing his mandolin in a tiny dive or drinking the rotgut rum served up at La Retro than talking about how much better it is to live offline than on. Even so, the small group at Antoine's was welcoming, most of the people being strangers to one another. A small man, who had the odd affectation of wearing wire-rimmed spectacles, stood after about a half-dozen people had gathered around the small table decorated by a hollow sign depicting a bushy tree. "Hi, everyone," he said in a quiet but powerful voice. "I'm Homer Valencia, and I'm glad to see you all here. It's good to see a few friendly faces who came down to spend some quality time in the real world." "Thanks for organizing this," the woman who was sitting next to Dex said. "I've been wanting to meet some people for a long time, but it's hard to do if you don't already have a scene, you know?" "Exactly," Valencia said, smiling. "So, I don't have a particular program set out for today. I was hoping we could just let things evolve organically." Dex stole a glance around the table to see if anybody else found this guy a little much. Either he was alone in his opinion, or everyone else was good at hiding their amusement. Valencia continued. "So why don't we all just get a drink or something, and we'll see where things go? You know, just communicate with each other for a while. Really be present together." He smiled at the group again, then busied himself with the tabletop menu system. Dex turned to the woman beside him, who'd spoken up and broke the ice. "So," he began, "you've been trying to meet people. Are you new in town?" He realized that he sounded like a has-been pickup artist, but she didn't seem to mind. "I am, actually," she said. "I lived in Paris until about 6 months ago. I just wanted to get out of the big city, maybe try and find a community out here in the world. It's been tough, though." Dex nodded. "I just moved here a year ago," he said. "Nice has a lot more happening on the street than my old hometown, but if you're on your own, it can be hard to meet people. No one at your job wanted to spend time in their off hours?" "No," she said, a small frown creasing her otherwise unlined face. "They're all M-City citizens." She made air quotes around the word citizens, and Dex detected a trace of disgust in her voice. "Lots of folks are," he said diplomatically. She snorted. "Those poor people," she said. "What do they think they're doing in there? Sitting alone in their apartments, playing at life in a simulation? It's sad, really." "Some people would say it's just another way to communicate," Dex said. "Please," the woman retorted. "It's no substitute for real life. It's just another way to isolate yourself. Can't they see that they're just making things worse for themselves in the long run? It's not like you can have a real relationship online. You don't even really know who you're talking to." She took a sip of her foamy drink. "They're all just going to end up alone." Dex didn't know what to say to that. After all, it wasn't as if she had any idea who he was, but she was happily chatting away. He just made some kind of noise that he hoped sounded vaguely positive. You know what someone ought to do? She continued.
What? Dex asked.
Blow the whole damn thing up, she said venomously. Then everyone would be forced back to the real world. It would do them all good.
You've been listening to The Beauty of Our Weapons by M. Darusha Wain. For more information about this and the other Anderson Dexter stories, please visit darusha.ca/dex. The theme music is First We Take Manhattan, performed by Donovan Alex and Yoko Rocks. More information at soundcloud.com/donovan-alex. Thanks for listening.